Hi, Mage fans, this is Terry Robinson, and before we get to today's episode with Danielle Lozon on adding the Unchained and the God Machine to your Mage Chronicle, I have some community notes. First, AscensionCon 2020 will be the week of June 12th through 14th. This is a virtual convention that's currently being organized on Facebook that should have a mix of panels and play opportunity, and I'll pass on more information once I have it. Adam and I are hoping to participate. Storyteller Vault, the licensed community creation portal for Onyx Path and White Wolf Games, is having a 20% off sale, and also until May 17th, 100% of the proceeds will go to the creators. Normally, creators get half, and this is a nice step up from that. This means that Enlightened Grimoire, Charles Siegel's Tome of All Mage Rotes, Ascension's Landscape, my book on Mage World Building, Secret of the Masquerade's Major Arcana System, those are all on sale. This covers all World of Darkness community supplements, like By Banner Bound, which is by friend of the show, Logan Rollins, of the Storytold Podcast, which is a book of changeling banner houses. If you buy through the link in the show notes, we get an affiliate credit, and that helps us pay the bills. YouTube channel The Primogen has started a short video series on the lore of Mage, and a link to the first episode giving an overview of Mage is there. Normally I limit community notes to Mage stuff, but if you're looking for Spanish-language Old World of Darkness material, Juarez by Night is a Spanish-language podcast that is currently doing a walkthrough of Vampire. Let's see how much of my high school Spanish I remember. Si quieres escuchar sobre vampiros, escúchalo. I'm sorry to everyone who speaks Spanish that I probably just offended. And with that, on with the show. So hi, Danielle. How you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining Mage the Podcast to talk about The God Machine Chronicle, and other such things. How did you get involved in writing for Chronicles of Darkness?
Well, first, thanks for having me. And second, wow, that's an old question. But that is also the question of how did I get involved in writing? Because Ooh. Chronicles of Darkness was probably one of my very first, Chronicles of Darkness, first edition, very first writing work was actually on Mage the Awakening. So I'm old school Mage the Awakening writer for back when CCP was publishing books. But I had written for CCP back when they were publishing books. I had written on a whole grand total of 2 books. And then CCP was like, we're not making any more books. And then Rich got a license to make books instead. And they were like, we're going to do a second edition of all this, you know, Chronicles of Darkness stuff, which if you follow the history was not being called Chronicles of Darkness at mm-hmm. the time. But
that was New World of Darkness at the time, or something like that.
It was New World of Darkness. Yeah, New World of Darkness. It's still World of Darkness, but it was the newer one. Anyway, they were like, we're going to do a second edition, but we can't actually call it a second edition. So we're going to make a new blue book, and we're going to call it the God Machine Chronicle. And we're going to update all the rules, and we're going to give it a definitive direction. One of the things that the first edition lacked was a cohesive story. It was a very sandbox style game where it's like, here's all these setting elements that you could or could not use. Pick and choose at your whim, but we don't really have any kind of like overarching story or overarching structure or anything like that. And they were like, what we're going to do is we're going to write these chronicle books for every setting that gives an overarching theme and an overarching story. And we're going to call them the unofficial second editions. And then we finally got approval to call them second edition, which was amazing. So that's why there is a book. I have it. I could pull it off my shelf that says God Machine Chronicle. You can't buy that book anymore, I don't think. Yeah, you cannot buy that book anymore. You can buy the Chronicles of Darkness book, which has all the same information. So, and the reason that you can't buy the God Machine Chronicle book anymore is because it says, so you know you have this World of Darkness blue book, right? So you need that book to make this book make sense. So you have to have both those books to make the books make sense. And so for second edition, Chronicles of Darkness, we're like, well, we don't want you to have the first edition book to make the second edition book make sense. That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense.
So, and all to say, I got started in writing the God Machine Chronicle, Chronicles of Darkness, because somebody thought I did good work. And so they hired me.
Like in a completely unrelated field. Like I was actually a jeweler. That person, good writer.
So until very recently, I was a scientist. And I saw an alcohol, somebody was needed authors for something. And I was like, well, I wrote a thesis once.
So the God Machine Chronicle came out. And one of the things that you made mention of is a sandbox approach. Yeah. And when I think of RPG settings, there now seems to be kind of a slider where on one end, you may have something like maybe Pathfinder Society or something like that, where you are doing missions or quests that you have subscribed to or are being done as a group. And then maybe down from that a peg or two, you maybe have like Vampire during First Edition, where every new book advanced how the world was changing and you could choose to reflect those or not. And then you have Mage, which just doesn't have nearly as much meta plot. And then out the other end, you have something that is just completely sandboxy. And in my head, that's kind of what Chronicles of Darkness was. It was just this big open setting with things you could pick up or not. Is that a reasonable way of describing it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it spent a lot of time giving people tools to play a game with and not telling anybody how to play their game properly. And I think there's some interesting elements to that in any game of saying, like, here's a bunch of setting stuff. Like, we have covenants and we have clans and we'll, you know, give you some like details about what those look like. And we'll give you details on what those look like in a city. And we'll give you a city book, you know, we'll give you the New Orleans book and we'll
give Fallen Tower, Las Vegas, New Orleans by night.
You know, we'll give you setting, like historical settings. We'll give you Fall of the Camarilla. We'll give you Requiem for Rome. We'll give you all this stuff. And then you just do whatever you want with it, though. We'll say in one book that the founder of the Lankhead Sanctum is the Longinus and he stabbed Jesus and he became the first vampire, and like literally the same book will be like, that shit's not true. Like, use what you want. So I think there's an interesting approach to that. And I think in some ways it reads well, right? Especially for people who love world building. But for 90% of readers, they want something to hook into. Yeah. And they're very much more interested in the person who did the thing and the person that they may be able to get to meet who did the thing. And so I think Chronicles of Darkness, First Edition, I think it did well. You know, it was not a failed, despite what some people may say, it was not a failed experiment or anything like that, but it was very different and it felt very different. And so people who were used to Mage the Ascension looked at Mage the Awakening and fell apart. They were just like, what is this?
I don't know Mage the Awakening. I don't have an encyclopedic understanding of it by any stretch of the imagination. But, I mean, they're two different games. Yeah. And one of the things I love more than anything is periodically people on the Mage the Ascension forum or the Mage the Awakening forum will try and start shit and be like, what's the biggest thing you hate about the other system? And immediately the first seven responses are, it's a different game that kind of shares a name and has some shared inspiration. If you really don't like it, don't play it.
Man, the biggest thing I hate about Mage the Ascension is people like that.
Yeah. Like, what? People who advocate for peace between the lines?
No. Okay. People who are like, what's the biggest thing you hate? Like that, so, that's literally the thing I hate.
The Chronicles of Darkness was what I would call sandboxy. I've heard a term more recently that's been applied to like Trinity and Scion being day zero metaplot. Are those two, do you know if those are different? Like, is there a fundamental different way that Scion treated the world, or you're one of the developers on Aeon Continuum Assassin? What's the proper Trinity Continuum Assassin?
Adventure Continuum Trinity.
Oh, shit,
Assassin.
You're doing Adventure, not Assassin. Sorry.
No. It's okay, though. Okay. I'm writing on Assassins, and it will get to me eventually, even if I wasn't writing on it. Before Trinity Continuum specifically, I'm the StoryPath Systems developer. And
can we call you the Crunch Doc?
I kind of like that title, so yes.
But anyway, so you're developing a... What the hell is the book you're developing?
Okay, so I am developing Trinity Continuum, Adventure, ! Adventure is the chronologically the first, but the last in a line, and I say last with like, you can't see them, air quotes.
There are air quotes, and I am confirming for the listeners.
Because there's other time points that we may do, Assassins being kind of one of them. But the continuum takes into account alternate universes and alternate realities and all this kind of stuff. And Adventure, Aberrant, and Aeon all kind of happen in the same universe. Not all the other books that we put out within the Trinity Continuum will take place in that same universe, if that makes any sense. So Trinity Continuum Core is essentially the zero point of the game lines. It's modern day. Aberrant happens about 10 years in the future. Aeon happens about 200 years in the future. And Adventure happens some number of years in the past in the 30s, which I don't make me do that math right now because I don't want to.
So about 90 to 80 years ago, yeah.
So Adventure set in the 30s. And so that is this continuum. Assassins is set modern day, but it's parallel to the core book's modern day game.
Okay, so those two core books that are both contemporary, the Assassin's book does not contain the same story elements as the...
Right.
Okay.
And the Trinity Continuum has an interesting thing, because when you say like ground zero of metaplot, it's definitely, I feel like, true of the core book for Trinity Continuum, right? Because we introduce some elements in Trinity Continuum that are just kind of there. We introduce some allegiances, you know, okay. here's some people and here's some groups of people who are super powered and they work together and yay. And you can kind of play any game with this. You can kind of do anything you want with this, but we mentioned characters like some pharaoh who is the pharaoh's lightkeepers and who is like the master person who controls pharaoh's lightkeepers. We mentioned some, you know, we mentioned some named characters, but they're not. And then if you hit Aeon, which is the first of, or Aeon, however you want to say it, which is the first book that came out, which is the far future book. Mm-hmm. There's all this really heavy setting. There's a timeline for what happened in the world, and it's very important. And there's all this, you know, heavy setting stuff to set this, you know, far future kind of transhumanist game. And all this stuff in the back of the book that's like these setting secrets, and there's this like strong meta plot. Mm-hmm. And then you get Aberrant, and you realize, oh, okay, all those, and you get those allegiances far in the future, and they're all, you know, how this is how they advance and all this kind of stuff. And then when you get to Aberrant, we're like, oh, here's, you know, here it is, right, like 10 years after that core book, and here's how everything changed. And okay. like, you know, it was like superheroes and how they showed up. And there's like this, you see all these really strong elements that point to how things will go in the future that'll get us to Aeon. And
but is it one of those things where, for instance, I think to, for instance, Exalted. In Exalted mm-hmm. 3rd Edition, each additional setting book, no time passed. You pick this arbitrary year, the 5th year after the Scarlet Empress disappeared. Yeah. I don't know of a plan to have a book that depicts the 6th year after the Scarlet Empress, just in different mm-hmm. regions and in different ways. It is always January 1st, 2020 for this entire game line or something
yeah,
like this.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it'll look like. We have Aeon books that are coming out. You know, they're additional setting books, but they're all at the same time. Point. We're not creating so much a meta plot that moves as we put out new books in that specific game line. Instead, our meta plot moves through time through the game lines themselves.
Okay, but it is one of those things where maybe in Chronicles of Darkness, it took place in this indistinct time period that was roughly contemporary, but you could never really pin down necessarily a date unless it was a historical thing
right.
where, yeah, you do have this event. In Day Zero metaplot, you have a specific day, and we are giving you the complete lay of the landscape over any number of books. And if we want to advance forward in time, that's going to be a different line or a different edition.
Right. Yes. Okay. Now that I understand what you're talking about, yes, I think that's true for both Trinity and for Scion. I mean, and the story for Scion is, and for Trinity is, you know, here's some stuff that we did in first edition and we've moved the time point forward. And by doing that, in some cases, we've either accepted first edition is still true, or we have rewritten some of that to be second edition. So, okay. you know, Adventure is going to be set 30 years after Adventure's first edition. And it's really like a sequel almost, in the sense that like that stuff that happened in Adventure's first book is true, right? These things did happen. Max Mercer's in the book and he created the Aeon Society, and that happened 10 years ago.
Okay.
In this new edition. So it's almost like a little bit of a sequel and a second edition at the same time.
Okay.
And we didn't do that with all the books. You know, Aberrant has been pushed forward several years to make it a future for us, you mm-hmm. know, so 2028 instead of 2008. But everything is exactly the same.
Okay.
So instead of, oh, that stuff happened in 2008, it's no, this stuff is just now happening
okay.
in 2028, right?
Okay.
So
it just kind of shoved the timeline forward a little bit, or just shifted the events in the timeline
right,
forward.
Yeah. Right. Because, okay. you know, we can't talk about 2008 like it's the future. And things written in early 2000s, you know, or we can't talk about even 2018 like it's the future.
We have these set of events. We have one thing where it happens in a vague place in a vague time. And then we have this kind of middle ground that Chronicles of Darkness is starting to occupy. And that Mage is kind of occupied, where they're not saying any timeline is canon. There's this kind of milquetoast middle of the road thing. But
right.
if you want to have the Avatar Storm having had happened, things will take that in consideration, or the Technocracy
right.
Civil War, maybe.
Right.
Or what have you.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ascension's 20th edition kind of does this thing where it's like all timelines are true. And you get to decide which timeline you want to use.
Yep.
Where Chronicles of Darkness 2nd Edition is still kind of a nebulous time point, mm-hmm. right? It could be today, it could be tomorrow, it could be yesterday. You know, we didn't set a date on any of the events happening right now, except for, again, things that happened in the past. Instead, mm-hmm. what we did was we said, here are some hard, fast truths about the world, of which before we did not do. We didn't want to say anything was true. Anything, you can use anything. Instead, we're like, hey, these things are true. Mm-hmm.
So you've slightly tamped that down. The optionality has decreased slightly. I mean, a well-intentioned storyteller can obviously still change that.
Of course.
But boy, howdy, have you given a lot more stuff for someone who's just like, tell me what to do to yeah, run with that.
As much as I loved playing in first edition, which I did a ton, the difference was that, you know, I like coming up with my own stories and making up my own, you know, bullshit. It's why I make games.
Yeah.
But a lot of people would be, they struggled and I could see them struggling. Yeah. I mean, I played in games where people struggled and what they did was they were just like, you know, the book doesn't really tell you what kind of city structure to use. So we're just going to use the same city structure that you use in Apocalypse or whatever other equivalent World of Darkness game. And then they would be mad that the game wasn't as good, right, as yeah. that other game. Well, I could just be playing that other game. And I'm like, well, you did this to yourself, my friend.
And in defense of metaplot, I appreciate some metaplot because it gives you an idea of what can happen in a world where large epic events like Xerxes Jones igniting a nuclear device at the mouth of the Well of the Void, or the Avatar Storm happening, or the destruction of the Yellow Springs or what have you, or the attack on Stygia, or the return right. of the Antediluvian. I like a little bit of that to just be like, oh, I can do something at that scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah, I think metaplot is interesting, but I think also like every book advancing a metaplot is also
it's a bit much.
It's yeah. a bit much because, well, and I understand why you do it, but as a purchaser, as a consumer, it feels a little taxing because to know what's coming next, I must buy the next book. And it's mm-hmm. like, these aren't just, they're not novels. They're supplements for a game. Like, it's different.
I am kind of curious, though, about how many supplements are bought as novels, as this setting is fascinating to me and I just want more of it and... As opposed to I'm planning on using it at a table. Excuse me.
If my purchasing habits are anything like anyone else's, every single one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have the entirety of Exalted behind me. The question uh-huh. is why, and I why? Cannot answer that for you.
Because I wanted to read a game book.
Yeah. So Chronicles of Darkness doesn't have a strong meta plot, but there are some events. Mm-hmm. And from me looking in as an outsider, there were two distinct times where the world really seemed to change. Mm-hmm. One was the Contagion Chronicle that will eventually be out, which yes. is the idea that this world is hit by a thing. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. since one of the glorious things about Chronicles of Darkness is crossover was kind of baked in from the start, it makes it a lot easier to be like, how does my mind sphere interact with that person's usage of dominate or what have you, which
yes.
thankfully exists in both systems, so I don't sound like an idiot. or what have you. You had the Contagion Chronicle, which is this big supernatural yes. plague that eventually we will get the book for. And the other one was the God Machine Chronicle one of those? Was that also an event or was that just more of an expansion of the setting?
So the God Machine Chronicle's original purpose was to give something to the Blue Book that was like here's a chronicle and here's some truths about the world, but it was also to set up Demon the Descent. And okay. when we think about if we're going to create, and we also needed to set some metaphysics about the world, right? Like the only game that ever really cared about all of the metaphysics of the world was Mage the Awakening, because of course mage games cared yeah. about the metaphysics of the world, because they define the metaphysics of the world so that they can then break them. All mage games, any time where you're playing a witch, a wizard, or whatever, you're there to break reality or define it in your own way. So, you know, here we are, we're having like, okay, we want to make this demon game, but we need to define what a demon is. And how do we define what a demon is? But to first define what God is. And so the God Machine Chronicle said, we have written some fiction already, first edition fiction, that kind of is like this weird, otherworldly, big, monstrous thing that we can't really explain. And we have written some fiction that really kind of pulls into that and touches on that. And we want to take that and make that our meta plot. We want to say that in the world, there is something working behind the scenes and we don't understand, we can't understand. And when we interact with it, it is bigger than anything we could have ever imagined. And so that is the God Machine. So it is not an event. The God Machine didn't just show up. It's not an alien. It is like a definitive, interstitial, metaphysical fabric of the world is the God Machine. It, in some places of the book and in the chronicle, when defining what the God Machine is, we don't necessarily define what the God Machine is so much as we define what the world is, which is a series of programs and falsities that were created by the God Machine to cover up its existence.
So we have this giant entity that is presented, and it's one of those things where, at least to me as a reader through it, is it's not saying this is necessarily God, but this is an entity so capable of rewriting reality and so vast, it seems like it could be God, and we're not quite sure, in the same way that someone's pet may view you
as God,
because there's seemingly nothing outside of your ken, and you're capable of delivering punishment and answering to it. So you have this giant thing. But instead of taking, like, the Cthulhu direction of this weird, gibbering organic mass, it is fundamentally portrayed as being technological, seemingly.
Yes, absolutely. 100% technological. If I define the world as, you know, what is it that can change the world fundamentally?
Okay.
You know, it's either magic or it's science. Nothing else. Either one of those two things. And so we could have gone the magic route, Cthulhu, you know, God, actual religion. We instead said, but what if it's not? What if everything we attribute to God, what if everything we attribute to religion, what if everything we attribute to spirits, ghosts, all of that is actually a signal to noise ratio? We are literally just programs. We're just fucking numbers that are walking around interacting with other numbers. And we're all created by this big machine that is pumping out code constantly. And we're just code interacting with other bits of code. And for the most part, we have no idea that we are. If that's the truth about the world, if that's the reality of the world, then what makes the code? Some big programmer in the sky, the God Machine. So it is fundamentally technological, but it is also at the same time biological, because it has created all of these fleshy bits and all of these biological codes that it had, like, you know, fucking interacts with each other.
Oh yeah, in the same way that the genes in our body are fundamentally computational units, they just happen to be in carbon as opposed to silicon.
Right, yeah. So you know, when you ask, like, what is the God Machine? The answer is, it literally is a machine that's big enough to be God.
So reality is this computer, and there seems to be this entity that has figured out how to program it.
Or created the program initially. No one really knows.
Yeah, and that is unanswered. And if your chronicle wants to still have a capital G Abrahamic God, that you can still have that, and you can use the pretty common, I mean, in Demon the Fallen, it is presented that at some point that God stepped away from creation for whatever reason. Someone finds there's nobody at the keyboard, forgot to log out. Someone walks over and is trying to figure out how reality works. And over maybe millennia has just accumulated this omnipotence, as it were. So is the God Machine a thing? Can you go out somewhere and see it? Or is that established? Or what glimpses do we get of the God Machine and its activities?
Right. So the God Machine is a thing, and you can see it, but you don't see it in its entirety. It's too large for that.
Yeah.
Instead, you see essentially you see behind the veil, right? Okay. So there are some weak places, and these weak places may show, you know, essentially people might get glimpses of the gears that run beneath the surface of the city that makes the city go. You know, you may find a rent in the earth where there's a sinkhole, and instead of, you know, a cave with stalactites, you find a fucking server room, right?
And is it answered whether or not that is literally true or just kind of a metaphor the human mind grapples onto to make sense of it? Like, that ambiguity is kind of maintained, no?
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No. The God Machine is in the chronicle, the God Machine is really a fucking machine. And so when people run into, like, see the machine, see things like that, their brain can't grapple with it. So it's not a metaphor for, oh, I'm trying to see this thing and I see code. Instead, it's like, why is there a server room here? What? I don't understand. Why would that exist? That's not what's supposed to be here. And that actually like makes people realize that like they become conspiracy nuts. We call them stigmatics in the game, but they have been essentially, they've seen the God machine. They know it's fucking real. They've seen that everything we understand about reality is not real. They get taught everything we get taught in the real world. The people in the Chronicles of Darkness get taught. But when they see, oh, that's not real, like, you know, they see this truth, it makes them go like, oh, man. And it gives them the ability to start seeing through it everywhere.
Is there any sort of protective veil, or is it one of those things where the God machine literally just operates in like abandoned warehouses that no one are going to look through? Like, is there like a delirium or a mists or a shroud?
It's a little of both. So the God machine creates what is called infrastructure, and infrastructure is literally that abandoned warehouse that people aren't going into.
Okay.
It is also the media propaganda that keeps people from going into the warehouse. And it's also the, you know, the signs that get put outside that says, you know, hard hat area under construction, do not enter. It is literally all of that is infrastructure. And the God machine is constantly putting out infrastructure to hide itself from people and okay. to keep itself hidden. So it has kind of a buzz of, you know, the ability to make a media swarm or like a veil around itself, but it is constantly pumping out information. And so, and this is all in service to Demon. Okay. So when you read Demon, it, all of this makes way more sense. If you read the God Machine Chronicle, it kind of makes sense a little bit, but when you read Demon, like, oh, this makes so much more sense because that infrastructure is maintained by programs. So, you know, somebody needs to write the news article. Somebody needs to build the building. Somebody needs to trip that guy on the sidewalk so he busts his front teeth open. Like, that's a program, had to get made, got, you know, flipped on, and now it's running its processes. And when that program is done running its processes, it goes away. And so all of those programs are called angels. So the God machine creates angels to do its will on Earth, but they look like people. They look like, you know, they essentially, they assimilate and they do the thing they're supposed to do. And then the program goes away. Demons are angels who start to have human feelings.
Love ruins everything.
Yeah. Well, love, hate, jealousy, literally any feeling. They go from being a program to being a person, and they break out of the programming, because if a person is still also just programming or whatever, right? And we're all just living in this kind of made up pseudo world. Then the moment you go from being just a tool, a program, and knowing that that's all you are to being a person, you fundamentally just become a person at this point, right?
And the God machine loses direct access to direct you.
To direct you. But you still remember it. You're disconnected from it, but you don't forget that you were a program. Mm-hmm. You don't forget the things you were supposed to be doing as a program. And you don't forget the capabilities you had as a program, because as a program, you are far more capable than any normal person would ever be. And one of the things you do as a program is you make up false identities, you adopt people's lives, you take over somebody else for a while. And so ultimately, Demon the Descent is a spy game.
Yes, which is absolutely terrifying to me because I have no idea how to run one. And I'm and it's one of those things where it's like, I trust everyone. You can't in this.
So you're demon, you make these spy rings, essentially these demon rings. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, the God machine knows that I'm not its program anymore. And so it's fucking looking for me and it wants to reassimilate me. And so it's sending angels after me to reassimilate me, but I don't want to be assimilated. And so I am stealing people's identities and living undercover and trying to suborn infrastructure that I know is infrastructure so that I can have a safe place to fucking hide out.
Thematically, then, the powers that a demon has are the fact that mortals know how to interact with reality on this one level that we call physics, but there is this deeper occult physics, or you could say truer physics,
sure,
or something, yeah, that way of running reality that physics is just one part of, and
yes,
that every supernatural has just kind of found either little glitches to take advantage of, or that's a way of knitting it together. But I, as a demon, I still remember some of my old tricks. So that, yes, is my power.
Yeah. And so those tricks are called exploits and embeds. So you're either exploiting the program or you're using an embed, something you remember how to do.
And it's one of those things where two things to kind of convey. One, the Chronicles of Darkness are just flat out weirder than Old
yes,
World of Darkness.
They really are.
It is more surreal. It is more strange. It is more, I don't want to say paranoid, because it isn't necessarily, but everyone's maybe a little bit more suspicious and people are doing more weird stuff. The best comparison I have is, if anyone's ever been a parent, before you were a parent, you hear a kid say something weird and you're like, holy shit, that's weird. And then you become a parent and you realize the kids are saying weird shit all the time.
Yeah.
and Chronicles of Darkness is that latter half where just weird shit's happening kind of all the time. There's an ATM machine somewhere that if you put a piece of your hair in it, you'll get a $20 bill out of it. And you know what? Free $20. I'm not necessarily going to question it. And the other thing is that the things the God Machine asks people to do, it does not necessarily look like a John le Carré novel where it's like, you need to plant this honeypot to get information from the Russian ambassador. It may be something like, you have to fold 1,000 paper cranes and dump them into this park fountain before next Tuesday. Otherwise, the sun will explode.
And yes. Yes.
And it's wonderfully surreal. And yes. That was an inspiration when I wrote Ascension's Landscape, which is a made supplement on setting. And that is one of the knobs that you can change. How flat out weird is the world?
Right.
And unlike Mage, where people are like, well, I don't get how it actually works. The idea that things are just strange and there's this thing humans can't possibly understand allows a storyteller to sweep an impossible amount of metaphysics under the rug.
Oh, yes.
When players are like, well, how does that work? Sorry, well, I just wanted to give a little bit more
flavor.
Oh,
no, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, with God Machine, you can be really deep in the nitty gritty of how do things work metaphysically. Mage the Awakening cares a lot about how does this thing work metaphysically, where Hunter cares not at all about how it works metaphysically. They just want to know, can I shoot it?
Yeah.
And the answer is often yes.
If we were to take the idea of the God Machine and jam it into the Old World of Darkness, is there anything that fundamentally prevents a storyteller from saying, hey, there is this massive umbral entity that is slowly rebuilding reality in its own image? And it's slightly scaled down, but is that...
I think you could absolutely do that. I think the only people who could interact or care about it would be, say, like the werewolves and mages in the first place. I could see it being a technocracy plotline where, you know, the technocracy is just kind of like, wait a minute, what is this?
And it seems like a pretty fascinating thing where at the one hand you have Iteration X that's like, holy shit, this is the apotheosis of everything we believe.
But also not.
Exactly. Do we get an idea of what the God Machine's master plan is?
No. Inscrutable, unknowable.
And there are probably people who are like, oh man, this is taking, God left, this entity is taking over and is trying to reprogram reality for its benefit. Well, there may be other people who are like, oh no, we need to let this thing do its jam. Maybe this is what is keeping reality going. This is regular repair and maintenance for it.
Yep.
So the other thing that you mentioned that seems like a fascinating hook is, so we're mages, we're used to getting into weird spaces and seeing weird shit. And the God Machine, obviously, it seems like the God Machine doesn't want mortals to stumble upon this stuff. But you're a mage, you use your mage vision, and you see this piece of infrastructure, and suddenly the machine is aware of you. Can you give us an example of what that chase could look like?
That's what I say. It depends on what you are as to what that would look like, in my opinion, because, you know, in general, it's going to start out the same, right? Some angels are going to come to erase you.
And do they look like biblical angels, or are they going to look like like the NWO? Or are they going to look like black hats and mirror shades?
Yeah, I mean, they may look like, you know, they look like your mom.
Okay.
They're not even going to look like black suits and mirror shades Agent Smiths. They're going to look like your mom who's suddenly acting weird.
Now, have they taken over my mom or copied my mom?
They've taken over her life for the moment that we need her, and then she can have it back.
Okay, so almost like agents in the Matrix, except for the part where they change shape.
Right.
Okay.
And, you know, they may be able to change shape because they've taken over her life, her programming. And so if you get into a fight with them, they may be like, nah, gotta go weird program bullshit and just be like a fucking monster. And demons do that. It's called blowing their cover. But you're
going loud.
Yeah, going loud. They do have like a demonic form.
Okay.
Essentially, this is what you look like when you're hanging out in the code, when you're not subsuming someone's life. Mm-hmm. And angels have that same thing. And so, yeah, you may have some angels show up and try to snuff you out. And then when you get into a fight, they go, well, this human form just isn't doing it for me anymore. I got to become a bigger thing. But they're going to try to do it quietly at first because the angels operate. They're trying to snuff. You're not supposed to know. No one's supposed to know. take you out, who knows, by letting everybody else know.
Yeah, in the same way that the Technocracy, their first option is not to send a tank or a hit mark at you.
No.
they're going to send some meat at you first, right. And probably not even enlightened meat at first.
No, of course not. And when you say you don't know how to run a spy game, but honestly, the God Machine, running a game in which the God Machine is the bad guy, is running a game where you've got a little bit of spy stuff going on. Somebody's going to try to disappear you before anything else happens. And then if that doesn't work, it may become a bigger fight.
Does anything prevent the God Machine from taking over the other members of my cabal? For instance, if I'm a mage, or is that just a narrative convenience? Is it possible that one day we could be having a mage meeting at Mage Club, and it turns out someone is a Quisling or an infiltrator or something like that, or a mole?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing stopping it from doing that. In fact, there's rules for demons taking a supernatural creature as their cover.
Okay.
So.
But it's probably one of those things where if you're supernatural, you probably have more resistance to this than a bog standard mortal
that they would try and
take over.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So this angel reveals itself. What does it look like? Or what are some of the options of what it could look like?
What does it look like is a cool question because, you know, when designing this game, we had a lot of option for body horror. I think when we get to Deviant, like that game is got the most body horror of all Chronicles of Darkness games. But I want to say, like, World of Darkness and Chronicles of Darkness, their themes are very different. And, you know, World of Darkness is, in my opinion, not every single one of them, but it is a gothic horror game. Vampire's a gothic horror game. Apocalypse is still kind of a gothic horror game.
Mm-hmm. What defines gothic horror, just kind of as background?
So when I say gothic horror, I mean gothic in the sense of gothic literature. And what that is... there's often something that is going on in your world that is horrific. It's not horrific because it's, ooh, scary. It's horrific because it's inevitable. You didn't cause the problem. You have inherited this problem, whatever it is. And it's often family related. You didn't cause the problem. Your mom did, or your husband did, or your new husband did, or whatever. And so you're experiencing something that is horrific because of the nature of why it's a problem. I mean, the best example of a really good gothic horror story that has come out in recent years is Crimson Peak, where this girl like marries this guy. She goes and lives with him. His house is haunted. She's being haunted. Turns out he's a serial murderer who's been like murdering his wives.
As happens.
Or something along those lines. I mean, that's not exactly the plot, but like this kind of thing where she didn't do whatever, like this ghost is showing up. It has nothing to do with her.
Okay. So gothic horror would not be the serial killer being haunted by the ghosts of the people the serial killer killed.
Right.
That would not be gothic horror.
No, it is instead his best friend being haunted by the ghosts of the things he made. And you think about it like in Vampire. Here we are, you're playing a bunch of characters who are neonates or, you know, maybe Antilla, who are dealing with all these problems because they're fucking Elder and Methuselah level. People did shitty things in the past. And they're cursed because of it, and they have to deal with the consequences of it, and they're constantly dealing with the consequences of it because of things that they did not ask for or do themselves.
Yeah, the overarching theme in the World of Darkness is things used to be nice, then somebody broke it, and now we can't have nice things anymore, whether that be the Curse of Cain or the war against God or,
Well, yeah, I mean, like, and it's true for mages as well, in my opinion, where that the stories, it's not quite as strong a gothic horror story, but it is still like, paradox is an issue because you're fucking with the paradigm, but you're not the one who really suffers from paradox. It's all the people around you. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the same story where, you know, you're balancing this kind of like, you did a thing and now other people suffer, ha ha. And how much of that do you allow to happen? And how much of it don't you allow to happen? And what, and when you're suffering, is it because of something somebody else did that was shitty? And Apocalypse deals with that. I mean, like a lot of the games kind of deal with this more of a gothic story, where Chronicles of Darkness is more personal horror. And so personal horror being, I did a thing, and now I am suffering the consequences of the thing I did.
How does that then apply to like Vampire? Are you still embraced then?
Yeah, you are. But the things that you're doing throughout the night, and it's all about like kind of the tone of the game, right? Yeah, okay. Somebody embraced you. Yeah. And maybe you didn't choose that life, but maybe you did. Maybe you were like, please fucking embrace me.
Oh, that sounds super cool, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds super cool. Like, I want to do that. Or maybe, you know, and maybe that part wasn't your fault. But now that you're here, somebody embraced you. And then everything else that happened in your life, nobody's being like, well, because I embraced you, you're part of this clan. And because you're part of this clan, you know, everybody who's part of this clan is a shitbag. Yeah. Right. And it's like, oh, yeah, you're part of the clan still. But like, fucking nobody cares who your clan is. They care what you do.
How does that then tie back to demon?
So tying back to demon of this personal horror is that the demons know that the reason that all this is happening, whatever's going on in their life, is the result of their actions. They left, you know, and now they can't turn this off. And so, you know, there's some body horror in this, in that what do you look like as a demon is, well, normally I look like your Aunt Sally because I stole your Aunt Sally's life. And I have to deal with the consequences of it. Like, Aunt Sally doesn't really deal with that anymore because I've stolen her life. So I'm the one who has to deal with it.
Is Aunt Sally dead, or does Aunt Sally get to be Aunt Sally again when I move on as a demon?
Aunt Sally's pretty much dead.
She's always been a little dead on the inside.
Yeah, so that's, we're just making. Yeah, I've pretty much subsumed her entire life. And I mean, I think you can like get rid of covers, and you can like switch between covers. So mm-hmm. you can have somebody who's like a temporary cover that you've like made a deal with. Mm-hmm. So you can like make a pact with a demon to get a to be their cover, and you get some special sweetness. But every now and then they pop into your body and take over your life. And so those people are still alive. But like, I'm pretty sure your primary cover is just. But when I'm not in my cover, I am a horrible monster made of like a mix of electronic and biological parts.
So I'm this almost Cronenberg-esque war machine that is out in the world. I have my initial cover that I was granted, but the God machine knows that one. So I probably need to get a new one lickety-split. And I mean, dumb question. If this thing is so powerful, why doesn't it just immediately crush me or take me back over again?
Right. It tries to.
Okay.
That's kind of the story, is that it's constantly sending angels after you to take you back over again. And you are just as powerful as the angels it sends. And everything it does is a fucking process. Unlike several other entities that are omnipotent, it is not actually omnipotent. It has, just like any computer, it has rules by which it must act in. And it cannot break its own rules. Hmm. It can break the laws of physics all day long, but it can't break its own parameters.
And that may be provide me defense or buy me time. It's one of those things where it's in a lot of places. It knows a lot of stuff and can do a lot of things.
Yes.
But it is not quite omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent.
And that is, the God machine itself must act through these proxies, right? It must. It has no choice but to act through these proxies, because it does not have code to act in any other way. So it can't just make the road rise up and crush you.
That makes sense. So it has these intervening things, and they have powers, and they are taking advantage of reality. So unless there was already a rule that said the road could rise up and crush you, which it couldn't, it would need to have angels or infrastructure in place to do this. And infrastructure is a capital I word. That is a term of art in the setting, in the same way we would say paradox or spheres.
Okay. Yes, it absolutely is. Yeah.
We talked about a case where someone accidentally gets a glimpse of the God machine, and you're a supernatural creature, in this case a mage, and now there's this run and gun that you're doing. Mm-hmm. Are there societies of people, of non-demons, that interface with this? Like you mentioned before, I think the term was stigmatics.
Yes, stigmatics. These are people who have run across the God machine. Generally, you don't become a stigmatic unless you're a mortal. Like if you're a mage, if you're a werewolf, if you're a vampire, you already know that the world works in a way that is outside standard.
And this is just another weird way in which you found out the world.
Right. It's just another way. Yeah. You're just like, well, if I exist, so does that thing. Well, whatever. But human mortals, people who have not been exposed to that thing, when they do get exposed to that thing, they become stigmatics. And one of the things is, stigmatics can sense the God machine now that they know that it's there.
Okay.
Right. And when I say they become conspiracy theorists, essentially they have these, like, they do become, you know, I can sense when it's around, or I now can kind of tap into it a little bit, have oracular visions, and I can start tapping into it, and like, I can get some cybernetic bullshit out of it, or I can deal with infrastructure. Now that I know that it's there, I can start messing with it. But because of that, they're also a little bit keyed into them. And so it doesn't necessarily send angels after stigmatics, because the God machine starts to recognize stigmatics as just part of the workings.
And it sounds like one of those things where anytime you have something super powerful, you're going to have people that deny it. You're going to have people that fight against it. You're going to have people who worship it, and you're going to have people who want to take advantage of it.
Yes.
Does that happen with the God Machine too?
Yeah. There's definitely, you know, cultists who worship it. Then there are people like the demons who are trying to suborn it and take over it. And then there are people who are just trying to exist or understand it. Yeah, a myriad of things for that.
So we could have an entry for the Arcanum, which is mages. We're just curious about what's going on group that investigates these weird appearances of technological manifestations that are some odd reality. But we could also have a demon cult, which is actually an angel cult, where you have mortal cultists who stumble upon this thing, realize it may get power. The God Machine is like, oh, these aren't angels, but I may be able to use those. And they do this weird ritual, which happens to fit into one of its plans. Like, they think they're building an occult sacrifice point, but in actuality, the God Machine just needs a new place for infrastructure. And their doomsday cult is just where they're all going to drink poison at midnight, is just the God Machine cleaning up after itself. And it gets a fresh new piece of infrastructure out of this.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, in Spilled Blood, there's a bloodline of vampires who worship the God Machine. They think they're getting information from the God Machine, and they have visions and they have oracular abilities that they believe come from the God Machine. In first edition, there was a covenant, the Holy Engineers, which are, you know, we reference them a little bit in that bloodline, but essentially the Holy Engineers are associated with the God Machine as well.
So the God Machine is building these angels to do stuff. When it finishes a project, what does it get out of it?
Who knows? Who cares?
Okay. If you want, it gets plot device.
Right, exactly. Okay. Yeah, and that's one of the things about the God Machine, is it is this kind of unknowable, big, huge, inscrutable thing. So why is it building a new bridge and decommissioning the old bridge over the main river that runs through the city? Who fucking knows?
What is the point then, though, of having a possible antagonist that is so big?
It's not really an antagonist in the sense of it's the antagonist, right? Instead, it's a set piece. It's a setting piece that helps define the nature of the world.
Okay. In the same way a volcano could destroy your town, I wouldn't call the volcano the antagonist.
Exactly, right? Okay. You know, it's a set piece. We want to know that it's there. We want to know what it's capable of. We want to define it. But it's not the antagonist. And so in Demon, the antagonist is the God Machine to a certain degree, but it's really the angels who are your main antagonist.
But that would be like if we were doing a 1960s spy thriller and we're American spy agents, the Soviet Union is the enemy. I'm not going to single-handedly take down the Soviet Union,
right,
but I can single-handedly deal with the spies or assassins that it sends.
Right, exactly.
We made mention of the angel part of it, but these fleeing demons, what do their relationships with mortals tend to look like? Are they just kind of meet for them? Is that something my mages could meet and have as a potential ally?
It's really well defined in the Contagion Chronicle, how they, you know, interact with other individuals. But demons are, you know, suspicious by nature because they know weird shit and they came from weird shit. But that doesn't mean they really understand all the other supernatural creatures that exist. And some demons don't want to interact with anybody, but they generally do because their strength in numbers. And the more people who know about whatever this big bad thing is, the more people who they can get to help them. You know how to look for it. You know what to do when you see signs of angels. You know all these things. And so if we're going to take over, if my ultimate unachievable goal is to suborn the God Machine, take over and change the world, the more people helping me do that, the better. And so in general, they interact fairly well. But again, you know, if you're trying to play a demon alongside something like a mage or a changeling or a werewolf, all of those characters are human and have been human all their lives. The demon's kind of new to it.
Okay.
And so they're very different as far as they may not play nice because they just don't know how to.
Now, is this when you say they don't know how to be human, is this a character that may drink motor oil and for nutritive value, or is it more like a data? Something like, for instance, doesn't know how to eat, may drink candle wax or try and consume a brick.
Yeah, I mean, they still need to function like a human does.
Okay.
So they may try to do those things and find out real quick they can't.
Okay.
But instead, it's, yeah, it's a little that, you know, you may find somebody who's just now become a demon and they just don't understand humanity, but they have some understanding of humanity to the sense of like, they know they're supposed to eat food. They know they have to poop. They know they have to sleep. They know that these things are all kind of naturally ingrained in us. Instinctually, we need to eat, we need to breathe, we need to do these things. What they may not understand, though, is why are you crying when I yelled at you? I just was trying to get you to do the thing I want you to do.
Okay.
What are these things coming out of your eyeballs?
Why are you leaking?
Right. So they just don't necessarily understand social interactions. They don't necessarily, and they do a little bit. They can download a little bit of that stuff, but they're really just, the nuances of it don't make a lot of sense. And so their interactions are very transactional. They understand transactions. So they'll have some transactional interactions. They'll also have learning experiences. Every time you interact with a demon is a learning experience for that demon. Maybe not for you, but definitely for that demon.
Okay. Now, is this something, if these are seemingly hyper-learning programs, do all demons have like an intelligence of 5 or something like that? Or is it,
no,
is it the same mix of statistics we would normally associate?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And again, remember, like an angel is the program and it has full access to the God machine. The demon has been cut off from that. And so they don't necessarily remember everything they knew because they only know what they knew for this one job that they got put here to do before they broke free.
So we have this demon that's been introduced to a group. Maybe our characters witness this, witness the descent of a demon or whatever the term is when they become disconnected. You have this thing that still has a few flickers and flashes. What do the powers of a demon look like?
So demons have a lot of powers that let them supersede reality. So some example powers are, and these are embeds that are examples. I can't think of a bunch of exploits off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure you have an exploit that lets you like rain fire.
So is it safe to say an embed is a little thing where embeds are generally coincidental and exploits are probably vulgar?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Yeah. So like an embed is going to be something that really, it's a small thing that you have control over. So you may be able to tap into radio waves as an embed and listen over radio waves, everything that's coming in and out. You may be also able to change those radio waves as an embed. Demons are capable of some really powerful things, which I actually think, you know, if you're trying to put it in a mage game specifically, because, you know, you're a mage podcast. If you're trying to put it into, right, if you're trying to put it into and you're thinking about like, how does this fit with the paradigms of my character's paradigms? Demons are really on par with the reality bending magic of, you know, I can think about things that you would need to be able to do if you were a program that literally wrote and recreated reality.
Okay, so I'm an infiltration programmer. My job is to liberate a thing. So I'll probably have embeds like I can make doors unlock or never having been locked in the first place. I will have my dominate ability where I can just convince someone to let me in. Alternatively, I could have some version of Arcane where I just don't appear. So you have, so it's like having a bunch of rotes that are highly tuned. So it's much more narrow, but they seem like they could be very powerful.
Yes. Yes. Right. Again, like I can make fire rain from the sky. Like that's not a thing that could normally happen, but I know this program because it's happened once before.
Yeah.
Right.
And you puny mortals haven't figured out how hyper weather works or meta weather works to cause flaming frogs to come from the heavens. So most of these generally in World of Darkness and Old World of Darkness games, as power level increases, there is some countervailing force that prevents you from just hitting the win button all the time. Either the cost increases or it attracts the attention of something, or it's one of those things where like the proof that you're an archmaster is that you never use your spheres, or in mage you have paradox.
Right. So the big thing for demons is if they're going to use their powers, especially their exploits, it is going to draw the attention of angels.
Okay.
And especially if they're going to go into their demonic form, you know, you can pull bits of your demonic form. You can take like, oh, you know, my demonic form has razor sharp fucking razor blades for fingers. Okay. I am for the moment going to have razor blades for fingers, otherwise looking completely normal because I need razor blades for fingers. You would spend aether to get that demonic form bit for a little bit. And then it goes away at the end of the scene or whenever you turn it off. You could also just turn into your full demonic form by going loud, and you'll start getting Aether back, and you'll, but you also alert the authorities when you do that. Like, that's why it's called going loud.
Yeah. The God machine gets a text message. Yes. That's like, I'm here.
Code red, code red. So you're always running the risk of the God machine noticing your activity. And also as your cover rating, which because cover is your kind of power stat, as that gets higher, you start getting like weird defects as machine and human become more integrated. And so you get some weird defects as a demon as you become more powerful.
So you have the term of art in the game, I think, glitch, which, yes. I mean, sounds awful a lot like a paradox flaw.
Yeah.
For us mage folk, like a lot of these terms go, and as opposed to paradox, this impersonal force descending upon you, it's literally the God machine.
Yes.
it's a very distinct, so like more so than most supernaturals in the old world of darkness, you'd be like, oh, there's an omnipresent thing trying to manipulate reality that's keeping you down. Yeah, there unusual amount of sympathy between the two of us. How about that?
Right.
So they could be taken in as your mages are there trying to help this thing, and they're just, maybe they're initially fueled by curiosity. What is a mage going to get from a demon? Like, what does a demon theoretically bring to the party as an NPC?
You know, I could think of a lot of things that a demon could bring. If you want to put it in mage terms, they're going to have access to a lot of spheres in a narrow way, right? They're going to be powerful. They're going to be robust, but they're going to be kind of narrow. Like, what can they do? What can't they do? So if your game is, hey, there's this weird God machine thing, one of the things demons can do is that they can kind of tap into their memory of when they were part of that thing. And they can bring these memories as skills, right? So like, oh, I used to be, I once was a program that was a fighter, and now I know how to fight well. At least for right now. They're kind of a Swiss Army knife, and they can kind of fill a spot easily with just a little that maybe nobody thought they could fill, right? Okay. Like, oh, we don't have anybody who does this. And the demon can go, well, I remember a time.
Yeah. I remember.
when I could do that. Let me reconfigure.
Do you remember a time when certain people couldn't vote? Demon the Descent remembers.
Pepper's Farm remembers. Yep.
Thank you for getting that.
Yeah, of course. All the old memes.
Yeah. So they can fill something in their roster because it sounds like if they're fundamentally like machine people, they can probably take a lot of pain. Like they can.
They don't really die. Oh.
Like in the Terminator sensor.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean like, yeah, in the Terminator sense, like your body may die and then you just get a new cover. Sucks to be that old body.
This sounds like a wonderful morality question, too, that comes up with how you decide to do this.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, if you lose a body, that's a problem. And they can die, you know, if you get them in their demonic form and you beat them up and too much.
Okay.
But they're not, they're really, really resilient. They don't really, death, dying, what's that? In a way that many of the supernatural creatures in the world of darkness do not do. Right. You can kill almost every creature in the world of darkness.
You can shotgun just about everything into oblivion.
Yeah.
But
yeah. But the demons are particularly resistant to that because they're a program.
You have this program, maybe it does something useful where there's a quid pro quo. We have mages, they understand fundamentally what it is. The demon has the ability to tap into a mage, possibly as an alternate identity every once in a while in case it needs to do something. The mages get this jack of all trades, possibly, or these very narrow, very potent abilities. You get to, as a storyteller, introduce a metaphor about, so what is humanity? And how would you teach this thing how to do it? Your standard data plot lines.
Sure, yeah.
In addition to that, you also have an interesting angle, it appears to me, where it's like, oh, my character is religious and is suddenly second-guessing everything because you were an angel, and the form you took was what I think of when I think of an angel, and now I can see you. Right. And that raises questions as, what have I been worshiping all these years?
The God machine.
Yeah. or possibly the God machine could be co-opting mortals' impressions of angels for its own means. It is not answering that question, but it is providing a possibly very uncomfortable answer.
Yep.
For
we're
it.
We're gonna Babylon 5 this. So there's a race called Vorlons, and they have a single ambassador who shows up on the ship, and he's there the whole time. His name is Kosh. And he says really enigmatic things, and he gives like advice in like really cryptic ways, and he seems to be kind of an all-knowing
person. Oh, I remember, and whenever people see it, got it.
When people see the Vorlon race, they look like what we think of as angels.
Yeah.
Because
but when any race sees them, they think of what they
think of as angels. And yeah. They did that on purpose. Like they do that on purpose. And they say like, oh yeah, when you saw angels, you just saw four lines. Like there are no such thing as angels. It's just been us this whole time.
The Wizard of Oz, but backwards. And with,
and
with space guns. Okay. Yeah. So we have a bunch of interesting angles there. If I am a storyteller, this sounds interesting to me. What books do I grab?
Well, if you want specifically the deepest part of the God Machine, you want to include demons, you should get Demon the Descent, and you should maybe pick up the Storyteller Guide for Demon the Descent. The Player's Guide has some interesting stuff in it for players, and it adds another demon type, but I mean, really the Storyteller's Guide has got a lot of the like kind of story hooks that you're talking about. It's got a lot of the how to integrate the God Machine with your Chronicle and to make sense and to, you know, it has all of those storyteller advice things that I think would be good for any storyteller, even if you're not storytelling demon.
Will it give you advice on how to storytell espionage and so on? Is that part of the toolbox that it gives you or?
I believe so. I'm going to say yes, it does. Because it's a spy game. And I think the core book also talks a little bit about how to run an espionage game. Okay. I am also, though, it's been many years since I've read.
I have it behind me. I can verify books. It.
Yeah. So I may just be telling you, yes, it does. And maybe, who knows? I believe it does.
And Demon the Descent core rulebook is probably $15 on DriveThruRPG or $10 if you get it as an add-on to a Kickstarter.
Sure.
Is the line still going on or are there still books being published for it?
There's not any books being published currently, and we haven't done a second edition for Demon yet. I honestly have no idea what the status of that is, so I can't give you any insight into whether or not, second edition coming soon, because I have no idea.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time. I super appreciate this. If people have found your thoughts and your input inspiring in ways in which they can improve and better their games, how can our listeners get more of what you have to offer?
Well, they can follow me on Facebook because I'm mostly a Luddite and I'm an elder millennial, so I really only understand Facebook. But you can find me, Daniel Lozon, author. I have an author page where I do a lot of noodling about game design and what I've worked on in the past and things like that. So if you want my input on those kind of things, I just make blog posts every now and then. I haven't in a while, but I will again once. And then I'm on Twitter as Impernius. You can follow me there, but you will only get like a hot take from me like maybe once a month. Because that's about how often I look at Twitter. and then I am in some Discord circles.
You do talk about your work sometimes for bonus experience. Friend of the show, Monica Specca and Ray Cole. Do that. You have a few interviews over there. You run an online chronicle for them? No?
Yeah, okay. That is Letters Edged in Black. And it's through bonus experience and Misdirected Mark's channel on Twitch. So yeah, it's through them. I essentially said, like, Monica, I want to run a Blades in the Dark game. She was like, I have a podcast. I was like, that's all right. Let's do it.
So if you're interested, and all of this information will be in the show notes. So if you found this compelling, please go there. Danielle, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Mage the Podcast. You can subscribe to our show on Spotify, Anchor, TuneIn, iTunes, Google Play Podcasts, or the podcatcher of your choice. If you do, you'll get a toasty new episode each and every week. Our audience grows through personal recommendations, so if you know someone who'd like it, pass it on. Or leave a review on iTunes. Every bit helps. We have a hop in Discord community at discord.me/maidsthepodcast, and you can also give us your thoughts and feedback over email at maidsthepodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter @maidsthepodcast. This episode was made possible with the support of our executive producers, and they are Brendan, the Mark 8 Hitmark, Andrew, the Elbow Drop, John, Oracle Magnuson, Justin, the Nafondi Puncher, Anders, who is unconquered by paradox, Michael, Marauder Stopper Parker, and Richard, Bat, more like Camazotz, Brewster. If you'd like to support us and get a cool chat color in Discord and have me make up a fake nickname for you, go to magesthepodcast.com and click on Become a Supporter. Also go to Mage the Podcast for show notes and all of the previous shows. Bye.
I'm super excited to see what comes out of Exalted Essence, because just like that academic exercise that becomes a financial exercise, I'm kind of curious to see how that rolls.
We're just going to make everybody do calculus.
As an actuary, I am entirely fine with that.
Yeah, Exalted Essence is just going to be, we're just going to reskin a calculus textbook.
That would please me to no end.